Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. A current lawsuit alleges that Pennsylvania has broken its constitutional obligation to provide, quote, a thorough and efficient system of public education. As part of a collaborative series for NPR, the new education reporter for Keystone Crossroads has been looking into education funding. WPSU's Emily Reddy talks with Kevin McCoury, who says there are huge funding disparities among Pennsylvania's 500 school districts. And with Dan Yurovic Ocklesberg, an attorney at the Public Interest Law Center in Philadelphia, which is a part of the lawsuit.
Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
First, Pennsylvania has the widest spending gap of any state between the richest and poorest school districts. We're talking less than $10,000 a student on the low end to nearly $30,000 a student on the high end. Right, Kevin McCoury?
Right. There's other districts and other states with huge disparities. But, you know, what we're looking at here is the 20% of the districts that are the richest compared to the 20% of the districts that are the poorest. You're seeing a gap there that is unparalleled in other states. Absolutely correct.
And you're looking into these disparities as a part of the NPR School Money Project. There's a really interesting interactive on the website for that project where listeners can see what funding is like in their school districts.
That's right. NPR has done a great job pulling together these stories that so often can be parochial. You know, everybody thinks that education is the worst in their state. It's NPR, or the best in their state. NPR really pulled it together in a way that I thought synthesized the idea. And Pennsylvania was a state that stuck out for a number of reasons. And we were able to tell a pretty compelling story based on a family in Delaware County that is a plaintiff in the lawsuit that Dan's law firm is bringing against the state. Not only that's the state legislature, and the governor themselves are named as defendants in this lawsuit. And it says, hey, the state has fallen down on its constitutional responsibility, and it's asking the courts to intervene and say that you have to provide more funding so that students can reach the standards that you, the state, have, you know, in effect, laid out for students. Basically, you know, there was a former lawsuit in the 90s where there weren't these state standards in place, and there was an argument for we need to provide more funding for schools, and the court shot it down and said, well, there's no way to know what's fair. There's no way to say what the standard is. And so, you know, in the No Child Left Behind standardized test era, Pennsylvania, of course, has developed these standards. And this, you know, new set of legal action is saying, look, we have standards now. So there is a measurable objective to say that we need to get students to.
And you've done a nice setup for us. Why don't we listen to a little bit of that story that you did for that NPR series about one student in the Philadelphia area?
This winter, high school junior Jamira Miller would run to Spanish class, not to get a good seat.
The cold is definitely a distraction. Be like race to her class to get the best blankets.
Because of the room's uninsulated metal walls, Jamira's Spanish teacher provided blankets, such as life in the William Penn School District in an inner ring suburb of Philadelphia. The students here are largely low income and African American. The hardest part for Jamira isn't the cold, but knowing it's just not like this for students in other districts.
It's never going to be fair. They're always going to be a step ahead of us. They'll have more money than us, and they'll get better jobs than us, always.
Before her family moved, Jamira attended classes in the more affluent Upper Moreland District, which is predominantly white, and according to state and local records, spends about $1,200 more per student. That difference adds up to better buildings, smaller class sizes, and less teacher turnover. Jamira's mother, Jamela, says her daughter's time there made a huge difference academically.
Because of her foundation year, she's able to excel here, whereas, you know, students like my younger one who started off here, she kind of just plateaued and stayed.
The Millers moved because they needed more space, and closer to Philadelphia was their only option. They knew William Penn didn't have a great reputation, but they had a plan.
We thought we would be able to put our kids in private school, but we had like some things that came up. I lost my job, so financially it became hard.
So the Miller family that we just heard from there has joined a lawsuit against the state because of these funding disparities. This isn't just happening in Pennsylvania. More than a dozen states are facing lawsuits over whether they're spending enough on their public schools. Dan Yurovic Acklesberg, you're an attorney at the Public Interest Law Center in Philadelphia, which is a part of that lawsuit in Pennsylvania. What are you asking for from the state?
We're asking for the Supreme Court to say we can bring this case. And we're asking for a court to declare that the system of funding education is unconstitutional, that it's unconstitutional for two reasons. First, that it's inadequate, that there's just not enough money. So you have a family like the Millers that has their daughter running to a classroom to get a blanket because there's not enough resources to properly insulate a classroom. And also, we're asking the court to declare that the vast inequities that exist from district to district are also is also unconstitutional. So it's both the inadequacy and the inequity between districts.
This thorough and efficient system of public education that the Pennsylvania Constitution says is required, what does that mean?
That's a great question. I think what it must mean is that the Commonwealth needs to provide the resources so that every student can become a productive member of society, that they can meet state standards, that they can have the basic education that we all know that students need and deserve.
So let's talk about what causes these disparities in funding from one school district to another. How do the percentages of funding from state, federal, local break down in Pennsylvania compared to other states? Kevin, maybe you can take that on.
Yeah, sure. So Pennsylvania has a very high reliance on the local property tax. So I think on average across the state, the state's providing about 35% of the education funding, and the feds are providing about 10%, and the rest is up to localities. So you can imagine, if you're just going from one school district to another, one that has a high population of higher earners, has higher real estate wealth, you're going to get a lot more local income out of that system, and that's going to go into the school system. Compare that with another school system that doesn't have those things, and you're going to see wide inequity. So in this case, the family like the Millers, they were renting in a wealthier district in Montgomery County. When they bought their home, they bought in William Penn School District in Delaware County, which is 20 miles away, but a $1,200 difference per child in per pupil spending. So that adds up quick, right? That's 25 kids in a class, hypothetically, times 1,200. That's buying extra staff members and infrastructure and everything else. So that's where you're seeing the inequities. The entire gambit of Tom Wolf's education platform, Governor Tom Wolf's education platform, has been to shift that burden more onto the state.
So he wants more like 50% of the funding to come from the state.
Right. To have the state be paying for 50% of the bill and, see a reduction in property taxes in theory. Right. So that's kind of his gambit so far. That hasn't panned out the way that he's wanted it to. And we'll see if politically he can muster the ability to put some sort of deal together that would involve a lot of different factors, probably realistically, in getting that done. But so far, hasn't happened.
And you really hit the nail on the head. The issue is that we rely too much on local taxes, and we're a fairly economically segregated state. And so it creates an actual situation where the William Penn School District, in fact, taxes at a rate much higher than their wealthy neighbors. But because they have less wealth, they still can't provide the same resources. They're taxing at 2.5 times some of the other districts in Delaware County where they are, but they still can't come up with the funds. So they really have nowhere else to turn but the state.
And then, of course, the flip side, the solution would be a broad-based tax increase, right? So it has to be a sales tax or a personal income tax, and that is essentially redistributing wealth throughout the state, which, there's obviously philosophical debate to be had on whether or not that's a good thing or whether or not the state's taxpayers will bear that. Will you see a personal income tax increase or a sales tax increase in, a Beaver County to help pay for schools in Schuylkill County or Philadelphia County or Delaware County?
And those are a couple of the sources that Tom Wolf has said that he'd like to look to instead of property taxes, personal income taxes, sales taxes, and also a Marcellus Shale drilling tax.
And that's the one that's popular with the public, right? Because it puts the burden on an industry that the industry says it can't bear. And there's debate around that, of course, too.
It seems like it might also be popular to reduce property taxes and get this from other places, you know, to those who don't have kids in school to see, oh, my property taxes could be lower. It seems like that could be an attractive option.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think, especially for, like you said, senior citizens who have seen property tax increases many times in recent years, that would be an attractive option. That's something that Democrats always point out when budgets are decided and at the state level, and there's not a larger increase for education spending that they'd like to see. They say, well, you're going to see this increase in your property tax bill. So let's not act like there's not a tax increase here. It's just coming to you from a different direction that maybe lets people off the hook politically, in theory, in Harrisburg.
And that's exactly what happened after the large budget cuts in 2011. The large majority of school districts raised taxes. They raised the school taxes. So people's taxes went up. It's just that they were their property taxes and not a state broad-based tax.
And the other thing that's happening at the same time, and it's just probably really bad timing, but school district pension bills are going through the roof, and there's a lot of different reasons for that and a lot of different blames to assign for why that occurred. But in fact, it's occurring in a really big way from, you know, I don't have the numbers exactly, but maybe 5 years ago, districts were paying 5% of their salaries to the pension fund. This year, it's 30%. And so that makes it difficult, I think, to politically, when people are arguing for more education funding, to know that so much of it is just going to pensions.
Well, and on the broader political scene, I mean, Republican lawmakers are saying we need to figure out pensions across the state, and we need to figure out other costs, cutting costs in the budget before considering new taxes.
Yeah, that's been the position specifically of the Senate Republicans, and Jake Corman is kind of, when he took the majority leader role, said he's not signing on for anything big until he sees a pension adjustment. So the plan that was agreed to by Wolf in the framework, quote unquote, negotiations in December would effectively, for new hires, give them kind of half a traditional defined benefit pension and half a 401k. That was seen as palatable to Wolf. It had the support of the Senate, both Democrats and Republicans. It all kind of fell apart in the House, and that was one of the reasons why, maybe the big reason why, Wolf didn't get the bigger education funding number that he had been seeking, and a couple other of the big pieces in those negotiations fell apart. And in the end, you know, Wolf had been seeking $400 million in increased funding this year. It ended up being $200 million.
It's important to remember the context so that there is no reasonable way, there are no efficiencies that the state could find that will let it adequately fund its schools. So the last time the state studied this was 2007. The legislature commissioned a costing out study. It was a bipartisan decision. And at that point, public schools across the state were underfunded by an aggregate of $4.4 billion.
That's the adequacy study that said that 475 out of Pennsylvania's 500 districts needed more money?
That's right. And funding increased a couple years after that, but then was back reduced in 2011. And so we are still billions of dollars in the hole. This is a large problem that's going to take a long-term solution, but it needs funds. There's no way to find fraud, waste, and abuse in the system that is going to get us to efficient funding or to sufficient funding.
To Dan's point, you know, billions in the hole, and that's why education advocates are saying we need $400 million a year, every year, for 8 years to add up to $3 billion-something, which you can just imagine is going to be very, very politically difficult to accomplish. I actually talked to Wolf this week about that prospect, and he flatly said, no, that's politically never going to happen.
And which is why we brought the lawsuit, because, you know, we can get in these single budget fights, and it was obviously a dramatic budget standoff that we had in the state, but that really was just 1 year of funding for a state that is deeply in the hole, and we need long-term changes and long-term investment, and it's going to take a lot of work, And this is not a one-year problem. This is a many-year problem that's going to take many years to get out of.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about education funding in Pennsylvania. WPSU's Emily Reddy talked with Dan Yurevic Ockelsberg, an attorney at the Public Interest Law Center in Philadelphia, which is suing the state over education funding disparities, and with Kevin McCoury, the education reporter for Keystone Crossroads.
Governor Wolf asked for $400 million in the state budget for education this past year. He got $200 million. Another thing Wolf wants to do is to change the way we allocate funding for education. He used the fair funding formula for some of that money. Can you talk about that fair funding formula?
Sure. It gets a little complicated in here, but a year and a half ago or so, a bipartisan commission came together to say, we did, at that point, there was no formula. There was no predictable way of how the state divides the money that it decides it's going to spend on education. And so this commission came together, Democrats and Republicans, and came up with this plan to say, all right, let's put together a formula that takes into account enrollment, takes into account poverty, acute levels of poverty, takes into account how many kids in a district are learning English still, takes into account how sparse a district is, and acknowledging that having to bus kids all over the place, there's a cost to that. So came up with a bipartisan solution. This was universally regarded as a good formula. And when the budget negotiations of last year were on the table, Wolf's hope was actually to shelve that formula for a year and instead restore the districts that were hurt worst in the first Tom Corbett era budget, which coincided with the expiration of federal stimulus dollars. So his idea was, Philadelphia was really hurt, and Pittsburgh was hurt, and Chester Upland was hurt, and on and on in that vein. Let's restore those first and then implement this new bipartisan formula so that, in his words, those districts aren't starting from behind. Now, there was a lot of pushback to that on both sides of the aisle, because in the end, what that would mean is that if you just go with the new formula plan, if I'm a Democratic senator who represents Scranton, my district would do better under that plan than the Wolf Restoration Plan. So in the end, the Wolf Restoration Plan kind of went to bed, and now we've implemented only the new money through the fair funding formula, and the advocates are hoping that the legislature commits to that over the long run. But again, that's only the new money. So there's, $5-6 billion in the basic education pot that's still being divided the old way, which basically says we're going to give you the same amount you got last year and you can count on that, which has been a huge problem for districts who have seen a lot of enrollment growth over the past couple decades. So basically, they're a bunch of new families moving into these towns, going to these schools. The state's not acknowledging that the district has more students in its schools, so that their per pupil rate keeps going down as their population goes up. So that's one of the things that drives inequities in Pennsylvania. But it's so politically difficult for any representative or senator to vote for their district getting less money. So even if a district's been losing enrollment, and technically, the state would consider them quote unquote overfunded based on these models, it's hard to say, yeah, well, I agree that we should get less money even though we have less people. Now, to people in the advocacy community, and I think maybe Dan would say this too, the entire system is underfunded.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. The system as a whole is underfunded. But it is important to note that this fair funding formula only applies to new money. And so what that means, for example, is if we applied the funding formula to all state money, a school district like York or Reading would have thousands of dollars more per student right now just for their share of total state funding, right? But because it's only applying to new money, those inequities are going to take a really long time to come out of the system. And in the budget fight that just passed, the budget that just passed, the governor had sort of created a hybrid approach where there was going to be some restoration, but because they were proposing $400 million, it was big enough that everyone could kind of come out ahead. And so what happened was once the numbers started getting lower and lower and lower, you kind of couldn't do both.
I would say if we could focus on Philadelphia for just a second, one of the drivers of education inequity is really the way the state funds charter schools. And there used to be an acknowledgement from the state that there's an added cost when you have a charter school in your city. And there was a budget line called the charter reimbursement line. That was one of the things that was cut in the first Corbett budget. And that's really what hurt Philadelphia the most. And that's the thing that hasn't come back. So even when Wolf's proposing, you know, new money for the basic education pot, we still don't have this line that acknowledges the added costs of charters. And that's something that hurts Bethlehem, that hurts Reading, that hurts any district that has charters in it, and really all districts, actually, because all districts have students that go to cyber charters.
And there's some huge number of charter schools in Philadelphia.
Yeah, there. I mean, we by far have the most charters. There's 80-something charters here, about 60,000 kids in charter schools. The traditional district serves about 130,000. So you're looking at about, you know, 200,000 or so kids in total in public schools in Philadelphia, about two-thirds in the traditional district, a third in the charter sector.
And the way that, because we don't reimburse school districts for costs we know they absorb when kids decide to go to charters, we create a pretty terrible situation where a parent may make a reasonable decision to send their child to a charter school, but because we don't reimburse the school district, they're not just taking their own students' funds, right? They're taking additional funds from other students, right? There is a lost cost, and that lost cost is not to a system, it's to the classrooms of the district schools that are still educating 120,000 students. So it's a system that desperately needs reform.
You talked about schools, basically the funding is based on what you had last year, and it doesn't go down, but it doesn't go up much. Can you talk about this sort of guideline of hold harmless that works in Pennsylvania?
Sure. I mean, Pittsburgh is kind of the classic example because it's lost population pretty heavily over the past few decades, maybe gaining again slightly now. But in that situation, you've seen the per pupil expenditure rise into the $20,000 range, where in Philadelphia, it's like $14,000, $15,000 range. That's a big difference per pupil between the state's two largest cities. And it really, it's driven by that hold harmless idea. But like I said, it's hard to say that, if you represent Pittsburgh, you're going to vote for eradicating hold harmless because it means there's going to be less resources going into that system. And I'm less familiar, admittedly, with what happens in Pittsburgh. But, you know, they might argue there that the needs are very high and that money is very needed and is helping them bridge gaps and on good things. I admittedly should read up on Pittsburgh and get to know the situation more. But I do know that they've been a beneficiary in a large way of hold harmless protections.
And I think that hold harmless is a very understandable and reasonable proposition. But I think what it does is it creates a responsibility that if you believe that we should hold harmless school districts, we should never reduce their funding, then you have to advocate for more funding. Because what you're saying is that we don't want to lay off a teacher because that will increase our class sizes. But there are schools all around the state of all sizes that never had those teachers to begin with and deserve them, right? So I think it's fine. And some of the strongest advocates for increased funding also believe in hold harmless. And I think that's fine. It's just it has to be coupled with a responsibility to significantly increase funding.
And back to the fair funding formula, one of the things that advocates for fair funding say, and I want to put this out there, this statistic, Pennsylvania is one of only three states that doesn't have something like a fair funding formula. And what advocates for a formula like that say is it lets schools plan for what's to come the next year.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue that now we do have a formula, though it's not been committed that we will follow through with it for years. But we did use one in this past budget. But like we were saying, only applied to
for
the new money.
For those added funds.
Right. So the advocates would like to see it committed in a way that, yeah, school districts would love to be able to plan exactly what they're going to get from year to year, put together five-year plans, gives them predictability. They know where they can grow. They know where they can plan it. You know, it makes sense. It's how you would want to run your household budget, too. In years past, you'd see things like, you know, extra funding might go to a district for no real specified reason, but maybe it's because their lawmaker or legislator who represents that district is – more tied to power. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that undermines confidence in government and undermines, the, I think, the public's trust. So, you know, having a predictable formula that says this is how much you get if you have XYZ is best for transparency and the public's trust.
And not only have we historically not had a funding formula, but it's also important to remember that we've also, except for a brief period of time, have never accepted the mandate of our Constitution that we actually need to adequately fund schools. So there is not a state goal outside of the Constitution, which is not being followed, that we actually need to fully fund public schools. So we implicitly acknowledge through our funding decisions that we're going to underfund schools. And I think that's a really important context to understand.
I would add another point just, you know, to give the other side. You know, when I talk to Republicans in Harrisburg especially, you know, they're quick to point out that, you know, the way that funds are spent is decided at the local level, right? And so, you know, they can allocate money from the state as much as they want, but how can they ensure that it's really going to reach the kids who need it most, that it's going to reach the classrooms? And so, you know, I think their thinking is, I have to protect the taxpayers in my region, and I am worried that some of this money won't be spent well at the local level.
And they might say, just because it's more money doesn't mean it's necessarily a better education.
Right. And you know, that is a debate that is argued on and off for decades, centuries, in every state and city and township and community in this nation. I think there's some evidence that suggests that if the money is spent well, it does make a huge difference. And there's other instances, of course, where money is misspent and maybe it didn't make the difference that people were hoping.
But I mean, funding matters, right? Hiring teachers matters. You know, it's easy to say that funding doesn't matter when you're not in a district that has 33 or more kids in a classroom, when it doesn't have full-time nurses, when it does has one guidance counselor for, you know, 1,500 students. It matters. We all know that it matters because we all know what kind of school we'd want our own child to go to.
So, Dan, what's next on this lawsuit?
We are currently awaiting argument before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. We expect it to be in the fall of this year, most likely in September. If we win, what that means is that we go back and we have a trial. We get to put on evidence and show just how unconstitutional the system is, just how inequitable it is, just how irrational it is, and just how much it's failing the students of our state.
What are you asking for? How will you know when you've gotten to that thorough and efficient system of public education?
That's a great question. At some point, there will be some lines drawn as to when you have done enough. I would say when every child actually has the opportunity to meet state standards, that's a good start. And we know that we can measure that because the state has measured that. And in fact, even in the fair funding formula, the state doesn't actually say what adequacy is. But if you actually use those numbers, you can kind of figure out what the state has said every student needs, which they're still not doing. So we want the state to provide enough resources that every student can succeed. Every student can pass the required tests that they have to pass, and every student can have a decent education.
Thank you both for talking with me.
Thank you, Emily.
Thanks very much.
That was WPSU's Emily Reddy talking with Dan Jurevic Ockelsberg, an attorney at the Public Interest Law Center in Philadelphia, which is suing the state over education funding disparities, and with Kevin McCoury, the new education reporter for Keystone Crossroads. Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focused on Pennsylvania cities, their problems, and potential solutions. To hear more of Kevin McCoury's education reporting, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.